Are we all rolling by chance?
Yeah, I done been rolling.
You want to do a clap sync? Just say we did.
We do the clap sync. I never end up using it, but it's always fun just to go through the process. So
all right, so it'll be 3, 2, 1, clap. So here we go. 3, 2,
ready?
1, clap.
Yeah, see, that's f***ed up. That's really f***ed up.
That was awesome.
That was dynamite.
Why don't we just say 3, 2, 1, and then it's the assumed clap.
Well, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You clap when it says clap.
So then you say clap, and it's almost like a command after
you
say it.
I see. The idea is to sync with the word clap, but, you know.
There you go. That's it. We're good. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Here we go.
Three, two, one. Clap. Oh, I thought we were going to say clap.
Let's talk. Aaron Phillips is a very versatile actor on mic and on stage. You can hear Aaron in national commercials like Navy Federal Credit Union. He's also the voice of Raytheon in World of Warcraft. He's also in Lord of the Rings Online and Grand Theft Auto 5, and he's on stage singing all around the world as part of Disney in Concert, A Tale as Old as Time. A very cool career for a very cool guy. Let's talk voiceover, Aaron Phillips.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
That was a great intro.
I'm starting to make a name for myself just writing the intros.
Wow.
And I think that there's a career path somewhere for that.
Dude,
I just haven't quite found it yet.
Monetize it, right? That's the answer.
Right?
Just find a way.
If you want the world's greatest intro, hire me. I got it.
There it is.
So, Aaron, you and Randy have actually been working together for a while now. How did you guys meet?
How did we meet? Was it a...
I don't know. Randy, I asked Randy and he had the same thing.
Oh,
he's like,
that's why you're asking me. I think.
Yeah, he said Aaron will know.
Yeah, sure. It was a long time ago.
I remember the first time I met you in person.
Yeah.
And that was that bar in New York that was one of the few bars in New York that didn't look like a bar in New York.
That's true. It was like a German, upstairs German beer hall.
Right.
You don't remember how you met?
No, I don't.
I guess not. I just started doing auditions for him, but I don't remember.
You started working.
Yeah, I don't remember where I found him.
My phone rang, and he started hiring me, and checks started showing up, so I continued to take his calls.
I never questioned it. Yeah.
So Aaron was actually in BlizzCon when Andrea Toyas started putting some of the voice actors for the games on stage. And Aaron was on that very first panel.
It's true.
And I just happened to be in LA then, so...
It was much more interesting being around all the ghouls and goblins, so...
That was, that one guy that came backstage that was actually dressed as Raytheon. That was surreal.
Yeah, I saw a few. It was... That was surreal. I think that was the first time I've ever, had someone cosplay one of my characters, which was, that's always a treat.
I was going to say, that's a really bizarre thing. When you do a character and then all these people dress up.
Oh, man. I think it's super flattering because, to me, for everybody involved with making the character. So, I'm just one small part, obviously. They've got these artists that are making them look the way they look, which to a cosplayer obviously is important. But also, the writers, the development team, everybody that's helped create this character into what it is. That really had an effect on someone to the point where they are willing to put together a costume, spend money on it, whatever it is that goes into that. I've never made a costume before, but the fact that it affected them that much is, I think, a very flattering thing.
I think that for me, that was probably the first time I ever saw cosplay on that kind of a level because, I'll go to GDC and E3 and you will have people who dress up. But it's the random person as opposed to look, a third.
Yeah, totally.
So obviously you do a lot of voice for video games. Where is your bread and butter as a voice actor, Aaron?
I would say definitely commercial. I mean, being in New York especially, LA is a different scene. So there is, I think, more video game and more animation out there. And New York is... it seems to me, at least, much more commercial based, which is great if you're trying to make money. So that
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So that's That was what I concentrated on when I first got into it, because it was just like very obvious to me right away that there was much more of that available, and that was the best way to support yourself while you maybe chase other dreams, for instance, animation, video game, whatever it is that you really want to concentrate on, like what you like to sink your teeth into. Because for me, making money's good, but obviously, you know, I'm an artist, man. So
I'm an artist until the mortgage doesn't cash.
Then I'm a homeless artist, and that's, you know, there's plenty of those.
Oh, that's actually redundant. Then you're just an artist.
Right, we're back full circle. But you know, so for me though, video games and animation are an opportunity to really stretch your legs as an artist. And so for me, the stuff that like I really love to sink my teeth into.
So when you see yourself as an artist, because I mean, you're doing theater, you're traveling the world with the Disney thing that you thought, I remember when that first started, and it's like, oh, this is going to go on for, it'll be a few shows, we'll have a few laughs, and what is it, like 6 years later?
Oh, more than
still
that.
Doing it?
More than that. Wow. We started in 2009. We've been doing this for almost 10 years.
So that means that I've known you at least that long, because I remember when you started it.
Yeah, I know, right? How crazy is that? We've known each other a long time, man.
Apparently we have.
We don't know how.
So how the heck do you land a gig like singing Disney tunes?
Yeah, well, so I've been a singer my whole life, and that's what I went to school for, was I actually went for classical voice with the idea that, like, while I didn't really want to do opera, it was a way to get the fundamentals that I knew I could extend to all facets of my singing career, and also, honestly, acting. It opened up a lot of resonance that I think is important. So, yeah, the Disney thing, I was out in L.A. I lived there for like 2.5 years. I had just done Les Mis down at the Moonlight Amphitheater, which is this beautiful outdoor space just north of San Diego. So I had just done that, and the music director from that, Ellen McMahon, she reached out to me, sent me an email, and was like, hey, my friend Ted Ricketts, who is the producer of the show, she said, Ted Ricketts wants to audition people. He wants kind of a closed audition, just like some recommendations from friends to do this Disney show with a live symphony orchestra, and they're going to pay you money. And she was like, she said, are you interested? And I was like, what?
Wait, did you say pay money? Yes.
Yeah, well, yes, I am. I was like, Ellen, have you met any actors? Like, yes, of course, yes. And actually, I did not go to the audition because I was up in San Francisco doing some stuff that weekend. And so I emailed Ted and was like, hey, I can't make it, but I really want to audition for you. Could maybe I put it on tape or something like that? And he said, well, how long are you in San Francisco? And I was like, just the weekend. And he was like, well, listen, I'll be back Sunday. Do you want to come to my house? Because I live in Santa Rosa. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I went over there. And it had like a CD accompaniment thing, and he set up a camera because his wife, Sherry Lynn, is also the director of the show and the writer for like the interstitials and things. And so we're all set to go. And then his two little daughters, who I don't know how old they were at the time, maybe like 7 and 9 or something, come trotting into the kitchen where we were doing it. And they sit down at the island and they're ready for a show. And so I'm like sitting there with Ted Ricketts and these two little girls, and I think they turned to him and said, like, Daddy, is this going to be any good? And I said,
oh, brutal critics.
Right?
Brutal critics.
And I said, yeah, I'm knock your socks off. They looked at themselves, they looked at each other, and they looked at their dad like, what the heck is this guy talking about? And then and then I sang, like, I don't know, Friend Like Me and Whole New World or something. And and then at the end, they were like, Daddy, that was really good, but my socks are still on. I was like, oh, God, that is brutal.
See, don't make promises you can't keep, mister.
No, I won't ever do it again.
So when you sing Disney songs like that, especially the character-y pieces, do you actually try to mimic some of the original character, or do you just sing it straight out? How does that work?
Right. So what's interesting about this show, because it's a concert show, so we're not like in the big costumes with like Mickey Mouse heads and whatnot. It's
going to be a little hard for mic placement.
Exactly, right? So the resonance chamber in there is bad, but we
cut down the reverb.
The guys wear slacks and kind of like, you know, flashy dress shirts, and the ladies wear cocktail dresses, and it's a very classy event. But you know, in a lot of concert shows, the artists are encouraged to just kind of do their own version of whatever song it is, right? And we kind of do a mix.
Cool.
So we do our own versions of certain songs, but we also, like, because I'm a character guy and because I'm a decent mimic, I can do Lumiere, you know? I can do the song In Summer from Frozen. I can kind of sound like Josh Gad. So why wouldn't I do that? Because for me, it's about connecting with the audience. And when I look out there and the kids are like looking up at the snowman from Frozen, Olaf, they're kind of freaking out. And it's awesome because like that is like touch that kid and it's awesome. So, yeah. So I do both.
Please tell me you do Dick Van Dyke British.
That's not British.
When he did Mary Poppins, it was so bad they actually call it Dick Van Dyke British.
The Van Dyke
because
Brit.
It's not really a British accent. It's not a Cockney accent.
I kind of reference it in one of the shows at one point, but I was like, I'm not going to do the whole song like this. No, it is absurd.
It's cruel and unusual. Has working for Disney in the stage show, has that created any additional opportunities working with Disney on other kinds of things or?
No.
Okay.
End of that thread.
I have done some things for Disney, and there are other things in the works, but that show has been like beautifully self-contained, actually. One of my castmates works in the parks. And so he's there like every day, and he does like all of their shows, and it's been a great steady job for him. And so it's funny, like he is all Disney all the time. I like to visit Disney. You know what I'm saying? I like to drop in and do my thing and then bounce.
So what's your favorite Disney song?
I don't know. I mean, we've done so many, like I said, three iterations of the show. And so Be Our Guest. One thing that I really love to do, well, I do Can You Feel the Love Tonight, which is always a really beautiful departure for the wacky character stuff I'm doing for most of the show.
Sure.
The one I've really enjoyed doing lately is this duet, So This Is Love from Cinderella, which is, you know, like, and it's just this.
As opposed to Is This Love from Whitesnake?
Correct. Yeah. Well, that was in the first version, but Whitesnake sued us.
That
so.
Was when Coverdale was actually in your partner in the Disney troupe, which was the first iteration, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The whole Tawny Catane incident kind of tampered that one a little bit.
Yeah.
It tainted it. Yeah.
Pull it from the show, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Not for small children, we'll put it that way.
No. No, but I'm lucky. I get to sing that duet with a very good friend of mine, Lisa Livesey, who is this tremendous singer, and it's just a really beautiful ballady moment that has really stuck out for me, I think, in the show.
I got the opportunity to play that song with Lisa back.
That's right. So Randy actually put together this incredible band for my wedding, which was in Austin, and Lisa and our friend Ari sang that song from the show as our first dance, which was pretty awesome. And Randy played on the piano. It was incredible. Magical.
How cool.
Magical.
I find it interesting because your experience is a very New York experience. I lived in both LA and New York at different points in my career. I'd be real interested in hearing about why you went to LA in the first place, how you made the transition, and what do you see as the biggest differences, the benefits of being in one versus the other versus, the challenges?
Okay, well, let's see. So I got out of college, worked regional theater for like a year, and then I took a job in South Korea. Well, I took the job as an actor-singer, but long story short, I ended up getting promoted to head of development for an English language educational theme park called English Village. It was like interactive shows, and so I was kind of in charge of like making these producing these shows so that kids could come for like a total immersion experience, that kind of thing. It was It was a crazy time in my life. But while I was there, met a girl. She's from L.A. I had planned to go to New York, but she didn't really want to go. So I was like, well, I always wanted to try L.A. at some point in my life. I'll go first instead of second. And so I did. And I think that's like a sort of unique experience. I think most people do it the other way around if they're going to do both. But I guess it just depends on where you start. But yeah, L.A., I had really just started getting my feet wet in voiceover when I was living in L.A. So that was actually the place where I began everything, which was awesome. I mean, I actually started doing voiceover in South Korea for like ESL stuff, English as a second language, like software and CDs and stuff like that. And that was a lot of fun. Yeah. And it really it gave me some experience so that when I got back, I was like, well, maybe I can make a little side income on this. So I went and took a class with William Williams. That's his real name. He has a studio called Aliso Creek Studios in North Hollywood. I went and took a class there, loved it, ended up recording my demo with him too, and then, you know, just started shopping myself around. And I wouldn't say that I ever really, at that point, got into like the major voiceover stuff in LA. So I don't have the experience there for that kind of thing. But then when I moved to New York, that's when things started to pick up a lot. And so this is where I belong for sure. And, you know, I go out to LA periodically for different projects and sometimes just to see friends because I have a lot of friends out there too. But yeah, I love both cities, but I think New York is home for me for sure.
With all the things that you're doing, I mean, is New York feel like your home because of the theater aspect, or I don't even know how you see yourself as an artist, if you still see yourself first as a singer, first as a theater person, versus a, you know, or if there's a first, is that part of why New York, or is there some other intrinsic thing that,
when you meet people and they say, what do you do? What do you tell them?
I tell them I live in New York. That is what I do.
And that's enough.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's enough.
No, I tell them I'm an actor singer, and I think that's definitely still true. I will say that I have not been pressing my musical theater career as hard as I used to. A, because I have a job. I'm in this Disney show. You know, I've been doing it for a long time. And a lot of singers, you know, if like, for instance, Broadway, right? Like, I have a lot of friends doing Broadway shows. And unless they get bored, most of them will stay on as long as the producers would like them to stay on. You know, a lot of people stay in those shows for years and years and years. So for me, it's like, I got a good job. And in that regard, and I get to sing a bunch. Plus, New York is an incredible place to do new works. We have a lot of writer friends. And my wife and I, and she's also a performer. So my wife and I are constantly doing workshops of new shows and that kind of thing. And so that's really a great artistic endeavor for us as well. But, you know, for me, since voiceover kind of took off, it became the obvious thing to lean into. And also, I love it. I fucking love doing it. So that's, for me, that is my primary concentration. That, and lately film and TV, I've been working that angle as well, because I just absolutely adore doing that stuff. So, but also New York, like, yeah, I'm here because there are a lot of incredible artistic opportunities for sure. And because... Sure. It's a major market, and I honestly believe, I mean, you don't have to live in a major market to do voiceover, obviously, these days, because, you know, home studios are what they are, and there's a lot of different kinds of work out there. But for me to be able to do the kind of voiceover stuff that I want to do, I have to live in a major market. It's just like the way it is. So for me, that's part of it. But really, it's that New York feels like home because it feels like home. Like, it's just, some people are the right fit for New York, and some people are, and there's a lot of people are not.
Right. When you move to a place, you kind of know. I know for me, it was always that I'd get somewhere and I'd kind of be there for a while and I'd go, you know, I have the itch to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then when that stops, that's kind of when you know you're home.
For sure. And I love LA, and I could totally see myself living out there again someday. And my wife and I have talked about it occasionally. So it's definitely a possibility. And, you know, when I'm super rich, I'm going to have a place in Malibu, and I'm going to have a place in the penthouse. No, brownstone. I'm much more interested in a brownstone.
Of course.
In Dumbo or something like that. Yeah. Anyway.
Let me know where you are so I can sublease the other. So a lot of the stuff you do is character voices, right?
Yeah, definitely.
We all do character voices at some age until we're told, stop making that stupid voice. Right? So
nobody ever told me that.
Right. There's actually a craft to finding a character. I mean, for me personally, I always find that it starts with a very physical process in order to find a voice, right?
Yeah, I start
with the visual. I focus on my body and my size. And really one of the interesting things for me in developing a character is the posture of the character, right? And because the posture then all of a sudden starts to put me in a very physical position that takes over my face and really makes my mouth move a certain way, and how I mold my mouth really starts to affect the way the words sound and how the words come out. What's your process for finding characters?
Your description is awesome. Like, that is, to me, elemental part of finding the character is finding that physicality. Yeah, for me, it is oftentimes a facial expression, I think. There's definitely a body element, you know. Is this a huge character? All right, well, I'm going to pull my shoulders back. I'm going to open up my chest a little more. It's going to be bigger. But for me, it's actually I really find that, and it's not just my mouth, but it's like, it is the eyes a lot of the time will change in accordance with who this person
and
is.
And that's a weird one, right?
Yeah.
That's a weird one because people go, what do you mean? You're acting with your eyes. It's a voice.
Yeah.
It makes all the difference in the world. And it is, because the way the face moves really affects the way the voice comes out.
Yeah, for sure. But Rathian, for instance, is a black dragon prince who's got some magical powers and whatnot, but he's very young. He's like a teenager, kind of a petulant teenager. But they wanted him to seem very aloof and like he was just above it all. And so for me, that's kind of a half-open lid. And he's always a little suspicious of who you might be. And that is like, I will always be able to fall into that voice the second my eyes droop. Because that is who that is. And so, yeah, I don't know. The eyes for me are a big part of it, I guess. But, you know, it's also really understanding people. I mean, that is, for me, a big part of character finding is having a Rolodex, a database of all different kinds of real humans. I don't think I've ever made a character that isn't loosely based on, even if it's just a generality, I don't go for specifics usually. I don't say like, oh, okay, I'm going to start with this person that I met in real life once. It's just that like, I've met this kind of a person many, many times, and I know who this person is. And being able to, I think, quickly understand like the essence of a person is a really important part of being an actor in general and definitely being a voice actor, because it lends itself
well,
to
it gives you a
character.
Frame of reference, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I got a question for you about Rathian, because I saw the beginning of that, but at some point, you know, you get turned over to Andrea, and then how much of that did you guys shape together? How much of it was really just you finding it? Because that's not the part I saw.
Yeah, sure. First of all, Andrea Toyez is like one of the best directors in the business. She is an incredible person, as you know, Randy. Just such an incredible human being. She is warm and very free with her praise in sessions. She will massage your ego until you are ready to just deliver the greatest performance of all time. At least that's what you will believe.
For more on Andrea Toyez, please listen to episode 7 and 8.
Oh,
episode
great.
7 and 8.
Okay.
A two-part.
Okay, well. I have to go back.
I'm sorry, back to our regularly scheduled program. Thank you.
Yeah, great. This guy's putting ads in. Okay, yeah. she's incredible. Definitely go listen to the episodes. And one of her great, great powers is that she, like I said, she pulls these, and now it's not even pulling, she doesn't pull the character out, she just gives you space to play.
Right.
She gives you the space to create whatever you're gonna create.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves actors, and she wants you to make it your own. But she also has this incredible knowledge of that world, of the World of Warcraft world, for instance. And so she knows it so well. She knows it backwards and forwards. So she knows what's appropriate. She knows what all these different kinds of characters generally sound like. But for Raytheon, I think he was so different from so many other kinds of characters. One thing that we talked about, Andrea and I talked about a lot, was what makes Raytheon different. And the big thing that we came away with was that we don't know whether we like him or not. We don't know whose mm-hmm. side he's on. We don't know if he's good or bad. And at the end of the day, the reality is that he really genuinely wants what's best for Azeroth, which is the world of the game. But he is willing to do whatever it takes to save mm-hmm. that world. And that may mean mm-hmm. killing a lot of people. So anyway, but like, yeah, so
working, so you got that going for you, yeah. which is nice.
Yeah. What an interesting character to get your hands on in general. The fact that Andrea just like opens up the floor for you and says, try something. And then you do it. And she's like, oh my God, you're a brilliant, beautiful genius. Mm-hmm. What if we try this? You know, she just explores with you instead of mm-hmm. at you, which is, I think, the mark of a really great director. So, yeah.
No, I agree. She's, you and I know this, you know, we've talked about it, but she's just, and she knows this, I'll tell her this. She's just amazing to watch, you know, as somebody who is a director, if I ever feel like I'm getting a little, too big for my britches, so to speak, if I ever am just like, I'm really good, just go sit in a session with Andre and walk away as a director and go, yeah, there's a world of things I can learn.
Well, yes, she's amazing. I should step in here and say that Randy Ryan is an also incredible director.
Yes, he is. I'll second that.
I've been working with you for what now? Like, I guess with, like 11 years now or something like that? Yeah, which is still blowing my mind. But because
and
I'm,
how did
because
you guys
I'm
meet again?
So old. Shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Shut up,
Brian.
but we've been working there forever. And I think the reason we work so well together is because you do very similar things there to Andrea. Like you really do give a lot of space to play, and you trust. You also both trust your actors. Like, I think once you find people that you like to work with, you stick with them because you want to be able to trust the people that you're working with to just be able to step in and deliver. And feeling that trust on the other side makes an actor much more likely to deliver something real and create a character that is going to make an impact on people. So thank you for that.
Agreed.
First of all, thank you for the kind words. Secondly, I think an advantage that Andrea and I, and I'm sure some other directors have, but that I know not all directors get the opportunity to do, is we all have a hand either directly or indirectly in casting. So on some level, there's a certain amount of cherry picking, or at least, you know, nudging. Hey, I think this person or these people would be the best ones to go with. So that helps with the trust factor, because, you know, you've already kind of got a vested interest in this person succeeding.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're a director that kind of gets, you know, gets people foisted on you, which happens more often in commercial work.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we want to work with this person and you're going to direct this, right? That's probably a much harder place. Well, I know it is because I've had that happen. That is a much harder place to come from, because then you're having to kind of learn what this person can or cannot do, how much you need to nudge them. It's almost, I wouldn't say a different skill set, but it is a less comfortable place, at least for me, to come in and work, because it's almost like, and of course this happens more in commercial than in video game and animation too. It's like coming in and reading cold copy, only it's going to be a final.
Yeah. You get one shot. Go for it. See what happens.
A lot of times that does happen in commercials. It's like, sure. Okay, we've already bought the time. This goes well. You and I, you remember we had a Chase commercial that was exactly like that.
Yeah.
Where they had, and they were writing it while we were, seriously, Brian, were writing it while we were doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they wrote way too much copy. And we had that one producer that was fighting.
Wait a minute. Time out. A commercial copywriter writing too much copy?
I know.
Get the hell out. Say it ain't so.
Oh.
No, I mean, that actually is part of the whole commercial world, right? Is oftentimes you do get stuck in a situation where you're basically cold reading. And then the other challenges on top of that is not only do you have an engineer and a producer that you're working with or a director, the clients are often there and the writers are in there and everybody's in there and everybody wants to tell you their vision.
Right.
Now, Aaron, you talked about how a lot of your work is commercial stuff. How do you deal with that? How do you keep those client relationships positive,
healthy,
engaging, and reoccurring?
I will say that while you do obviously end up running into these situations where, yeah, there's like a million cooks in the kitchen and everybody wants you to do different things and sometimes they want you to do opposite things, but at the same time, and funny little conflicting moments, I think I have been, maybe I've just been very lucky, but I actually find that in commercial a lot of the time, you know, people are really easy to work with. And if you go in and you have a pretty good innate understanding of copy and like what this is supposed to sound like, basically, then you're going to give a read. Like, I don't mind that because for me, it's also part of the exploration, right? It's like, I think they just want options at the end of the day. They want to be able to say, yeah, like, yeah, we want the right thing, but also like, they're beholden to clients, right? Most of the time. So it's like you've got the directors and the producers and the people from the ad agency, all these different things. They all are, at the end of the day, beholden to whoever the main client is, Pepsi, Chase, whatever it is. Yeah, I think like they want to be able to be like, okay, so you didn't like the thing that we thought was going to be perfect. Well, here are three other options that are like completely different directions. Do you like that? And then they maybe save themselves some time and money and don't have to have me come back in.
Right. By the way, just to give credit where credit is due, Aaron, Brian is the reason I'm directing.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I hired him early and often as a director. I mean, because he was, you know, that person of an actor who also can direct, who also is very good with other actors. And
in other words, I'm bossy. I'm very, very bossy.
Actually, nah, no, you're actually not.
Oh, you're an old softy.
See, yeah, but according to my kids, I'm bossy. I'm very, very bossy.
That's because they're your kids. They're not actors.
Yeah.
You know, if they were actors playing your kids, you'd probably be wonderful with them instead of beating them all the time.
I would love them if they were actors playing my kids.
See?
How much does it cost to buy one of those families?
No. I don't know. Go to New York, look on the streets. There are a lot of people. You can probably find
there you
somebody.
Go. I'm sure Aaron can hook me up, right?
Oh, yeah. Probably. I know everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Brian needs a son.
Yeah.
How about
He's willing to be your benefactor as long as you don't talk back.
Brian basically just encouraged me to start doing it. And it was just little baby steps where, you know, like we had, you know, some projects where we were both directing. It's like, okay, Brian, you take the A room, I'll take the B room. And just after a while, it's like, you know, no, I can actually, I mean, it was more than that, but it was, you know, I can actually do this. And it was just as much of a surprise to me as maybe anybody, but other than Brian, that I actually could do
it. No, actually, it was just as much of a surprise to me, too. So it was.
You just got tired of working with me. You know, I think you can do this yourself.
Just go in the other room.
Yeah. Yeah, you got this one. I swear to God. Just leave me alone, for God's sake.
Actually, that makes a lot more sense now that you say
See?
That.
See? Now you get it. Now it all makes sense.
Oddly, that's also what he says to his kids. It's just like, please just leave me alone.
Just leave me alone. Get Daddy a beer, okay? Get Daddy a beer. Oh, boy. Well, Aaron, this has been just a boatload of fun for us, man. And I hope you enjoyed it, too.
Absolutely. It was a hootenanny. And I really like hootenannies.
Well, and who doesn't love a good hootenanny?
I got them all to say hootenanny. Yeah, no, seriously, thanks for having me on, guys. This has been super fun.
Randall.
BT.
Aaron.
BT.
Thanks for joining us. We'll talk again real soon. Aaron Phillips is quite the entertainer. Our thanks to Aaron for joining us. You can find him on the interwebs at AaronBPhillips.com. Go there, check it out, book him for work, or just pay him to hang out with you if you happen to be in New York. He knows everyone. Let's Talk Voiceover is hosted by Randy Ryan, owner of Hamsterball Studios, voice, music, and sound design, and Brian Talbot, actor and all-around creative guy. If you have comments, questions, ideas for other show topics that you'd be interested in hearing, or you just want to let us know what you think, You can reach out to us by sending us an email to bt@letstalkvoiceover.com or go to our website at www.letstalkvoiceover.com. That's letstalkvoiceover.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite media app so you don't miss an episode. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter, too. Who knows, we might just post something there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk VoiceOver. We'll talk again real soon.